Hi, and welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name's Michelle Cachette. I'm in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Or afternoon, or whatever time this is.
One of my biggest struggles in life, whether it's work or family or relationships, is finding the courage to say a certain two-letter word.
Yes.
No. I have such a hard time.
No is a hard word.
It's a very hard word to say. You would think that because it's so short, it would just roll off our tongue.
I know. It is a complete sentence. However.
It is a complete sentence, yes. But it's very hard. I think there's a part of me that doesn't want to let anybody down. You know, I want to be a yes person. I want to be able to fulfill every request, but it's not possible. So
right. We
all struggle with the word no, or I'd say at least a vast majority of us. But it's not easy. Have you ever had difficulty? I know, I say this laughing because I know the...
Yeah,
Have you ever struggled with saying no?
Yeah, I'm a recovering people pleaser.
Mm-hmm, right there with you. I think we could probably form a support group.
So I hate to disappoint anybody. So if somebody asked me for my help, my heart is to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's half of the equation. The other half of the equation is fear of missing out.
Yes.
FOMO. So somebody invites me to do something and it's like, I don't really have the time. I don't have the space to do that in my calendar, but man, I hate to miss out. What if something happens?
What if something big happens and you're not there?
What if I never get invited to speak there again?
Oh, see, that's a big one. You know, I think if I don't say yes, then I may never get a request again. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So FOMO and the desire to please people are kind of the two motivations that really drive that, I think, for most people.
Now, I've also seen, though, I don't know how many years we've been working together now, but several.
Yeah,
probably 7 years off and on.
Yep.
I've seen you develop a very good ability to be able to set good boundaries and say no. And you're able to do it without needing to do a one-hour explanation of why, and you don't seem to feel as guilty about it, at least not on the outside. So I assume you've developed a process that you use to help you say no.
Well, definitely a process, and I think a shift in mindset. You know, when I woke up one morning with my calendar completely overcommitted, and I realized, you know what? I'm saying no all the time. I'm just saying no to the wrong people.
Mm.
You know, by saying yes to everybody else, I'm saying no to myself. I'm saying no to my family. I'm saying no to the important but not urgent projects, because the important projects never beg for your time.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel like you got to do them now. The urgent projects are right in your face, whether they're important or not. And so it's easy to say yes to those. But we're always saying no to something.
Something.
Yeah.
Because we have to. I mean,
yep.
There's a limited number of amount of time
in
each day, so it's not even possible to say yes to everything.
That's right.
Well, today you're going to give us 8 strategies for learning how to say no, basically to say no without feeling guilty and create more margin in our calendar. So let's dive right into it.
Okay.
And go ahead and give us that first strategy.
Yeah, I think the first one is just to acknowledge our resources are finite. I think this is hard for us because we think we can keep accepting invitations, requests, and that somehow we have this unlimited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, I have 168 hours in a week, just like you do, mm-hmm. just like the President of the United States does, just like any world leader or famous CEO of some big company that seems to get a lot done. They've got the same amount of time that all of us have.
Mm-hmm.
And so for most of us who already have a packed calendar, it's always a trade-off. You know, in other words, we can't say yes to something else
without
cheating something else. So it might be our sleep, and I used to do that routinely early in my career. You know,
I did too.
Well, I'll just get up earlier, or I'll just stay up later, or I'll work through my lunch hour and I won't take a lunch and just think I'll lose weight and it'll all be good. But it never
doesn't,
is.
It doesn't work that way.
Doesn't work that way,
Mm-mm.
No.
Absolutely. Okay, so acknowledge that our resources are finite, which is, you know, it sounds so... just almost obvious or automatic, but very hard for us to do.
Well, it's hard for us to do because usually the people that are making the request aren't consciously thinking, look, I know your resources are limited,
mm-hmm.
and I'm asking you to make a trade-off because your calendar's already full.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking you to take something else you've already said yes to, maybe yourself, maybe your family, maybe that important project, and I'm asking you to replace it with this thing I'm now requesting. They don't go through that process. And, you know, it's not fair to ask them to do that. That's our work that we have to do. But at the same time, I think that helps me to say no,
mm-hmm.
you know, to realize that look, I can't expect them to manage my calendar. You know, I can't expect them to manage my time. that's something I have to do and my team has to do. But I have to realize that those resources are indeed limited. And when they're gone, they're gone. When they're exhausted, they're exhausted.
And they're, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you can't recover them without margin to be able to recover it. Okay, so let's move on to the second strategy.
Yeah, the second one is to determine who needs access to you and who doesn't. A lot of people act as if everybody needs the same access, so that if you get a text message or you get an email, it doesn't matter who it's from. You know, if it's from your spouse or your child or your coworker or somebody that's merely an acquaintance on social media, that somehow
that they should all have the same.
Yeah, that they should have the same access. And I mean, that's just unreasonable on its face. It doesn't make sense.
The heart behind it. You know, because I want to be very accessible to people, and my heart wants to do that because I care about people, but it's not realistic.
Well, and there are certain people out there that, you know, make themselves available, put themselves out there, and kind of create the illusion, or even worse, the expectation that they're accessible. And I'm sure, by the way, I inadvertently do that even on my blog, by the fact that I'm on social media, people feel like they have a certain familiarity with me and access to me, and then they're surprised when they can't get to me, but that's just the nature of things.
Yes.
You know, I can't, I have 260,000 plus followers on Twitter, and I can't give access to all those people like I give access to my family or I give access to my team at Intentional Leadership. You know, it's just two different things. So I think you've got to determine, you've got to strategically make a determination what the priorities are. And so for me, for example, that means my family first. You know, they're going to have primary access. They can always get to me, and I will stop what I'm doing if it's an emergency, right?
Yes, I mean, that's absolutely
reasonable. Secondly, my team at Intentional Leadership. And beyond that team and a few extended people, good friends, I don't really want those people sending me text messages. And I tend to ignore them if they do, because I just can't. It only encourages behavior that is not sustainable for me, right? So same thing with email. You know, determine who has access, who needs my direct email address. Not very many people. There's probably 30 or 40 people in the world that have access to that. Because I can't go through 500 messages a day, which is what I get. Same thing on Twitter. You know, I get hundreds and hundreds of replies every day. Now, what I do try to do is I do try to read through the social media ones and reply occasionally, and we'll get into that in another strategy. But you've just got to decide who needs access, and you have to make the hard decision who's not going to have access or who's going to have limited access. And you can't feel guilty about that. It's by necessity. If you're going to give yourself to the things that are important, the things that really, truly matter over the long term, and ultimately so that you get to the end of your life and don't look back with regrets, you're going to have to limit this access on the front end, and it's going to make some. It's going to be some tough choices. It might even make people, some people, upset. But the truth is, people that don't get this and get upset, to me, that only validates the decision I've made.
Well, and that's an excellent point. I recently had somebody who I only knew via social media that was in Denver and wanted to have coffee with me.
Yeah,
which is a kind, you know, a kind request. I was very honored that she wanted to have coffee. But in order to have coffee with her, I'd have to give up a date with my spouse.
Yeah.
And the irony is I actually felt guilty about saying no, when I should feel guilty about even considering giving up a date with my spouse. I wonder what the value is at this point of writing down the people that you give access to. Like actually jotting it down so it's very tangible in your head, you know, what that circle or what those priorities are.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I've ever been that specific about it, but I have been very deliberate about who I hand out my personal email address. Okay. The problem is that here and there in a weak moment, you know, I'll give out my direct address.
Yes.
And inadvertently, and by the way, this is sometimes me just protecting myself from me. So this morning, for example, I got a text message from somebody that I had played golf with months, maybe years ago. And I'd given them my cell phone, and so now all of a sudden they sent me a text this morning. I couldn't even remember who the person was until he jogged my memory. And so he's asking me, making a request. The problem is, if you can get to me, I'll probably say yes. So I've built this up because I have this propensity to say yes. And so I want to create...
Almost an impulse, which I get.
It is.
I have that impulse. I just want to say yes.
And so I want to create, not barrier is the wrong word, a pause.
A pause. I think that's a very good way to say it.
Yeah. So I can really be thoughtful. And so if I can have somebody run interference for me, then that's helpful. Again, we'll get into that in another strategy. But yeah, so I think to your point, I think having a list of people that are sort of your inner circle, the people that you're going to give direct access to, I think probably could be very helpful.
Yeah, it creates that pause, which we'll talk about more in a little bit. Okay, let's move on to the next strategy. So far, we've talked about acknowledge that your resources are finite, and then two, determine who needs access to you and who doesn't. What's the third strategy?
Well, this is really practical, and this is something that I've done. I have, for example, two email addresses.
Okay.
So I have a private email address, and only that inner circle that I'm talking about can get to me at that address. And that's where my family communicates with me. That's where my staff communicates with me. That's where, frankly, people that are in my inner circle mastermind can communicate with me. But that's my private, closely held, top secret email address. And that's the one I don't like to give out. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I end up having to change that every couple of years because somebody replies all and it gets to a bunch of people that didn't have access before. But anyway, so having a private email address is very helpful. Then I have a public email address. So for example, if you go to my blog, there's a public email address that is michael@michaelhyatt.com. That doesn't come directly to me.
Okay.
So that's gonna be intercepted by one of my assistants, and they're gonna either reply on my behalf, or if it really does require my attention, then they'll bring it to me.
Okay.
Okay? So that all goes
they
in.
They just help vet that out for you.
Yeah.
And again, the point is that it's not that you don't have the heart to say yes, but it's not even physically possible for you to respond to 500 emails a day.
So what would happen is that they would all just languish in the inbox because I couldn't get to them.
Yes.
Or if I did get to them, I literally couldn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way for
them
to get the help that they're requesting, because usually the requests are requests we've had before and somebody else can help point them in the right direction. It doesn't have to be me.
Mm-hmm.
And if it needs my attention, they'll bring it to my attention.
Which is actually a win for everyone, because then the people who are writing are getting a quicker response, or even response, which they may not even get one if you didn't have your team. They're getting a quicker response, getting connected with the resources they want.
That's right.
And then those things that only you can respond to, you're able to see them because somebody helps weed them out for you.
So then in addition to the two email addresses, I have two telephone numbers.
Okay.
Okay. So I don't have landlines anymore. I don't know of too many people that
I don't have one either.
You know, too bad for the telephone companies.
Uh-huh.
So everything is cell or it's digital. So my cell phone, I treat the same way as I do my personal email address. Only a handful of people have access to that phone number. But then in addition to that, I have a Google Voice number, which is free. And the Google Voice number is the public number. And like, you know, when I go somewhere and they ask me for my telephone number, that's the one I give to them. So again, that does the same thing for me at a telephone level and a text message level. That the
it does text as well. Okay.
Yeah, so somebody tries to text that public one, it'll come in and somebody else will deal with it. Google ends up sending us an email, and my assistant gets it, and she can decide what to do with it.
Got it. All right. So take practical steps to limit your accessibility. This may be different for different people, but think through how you can be intentional about creating the right level of accessibility for you, depending on where you are. What's the fourth strategy?
The fourth strategy, and this is a game changer. When I realized, and this happened to me when I was an executive at Thomas Nelson, before I became the CEO, but I realized, you know what? I keep getting the same request over and over again. The language might be slightly different, but I said, I'll bet if I track this, there's a finite number of requests that I get. And I remember years ago, this was probably 35 years ago, maybe, I was young in my career, I visited Focus on the Family when it was still in Los Angeles, and I saw that Dr. Dobson had all these requests identified. I don't remember how many they had identified, and they had a way to respond to them, which we'll get to in another strategy. But I put those two together, and I thought, okay, there's got to be a finite number of requests. And so for the people that are listening to this, I'll bet it's true, too, that you know maybe somebody wants certain information that's somewhere on your web page. Or they have information, you know, if you're a speaker, they want to know what your speaking fees are or your availability, whatever. But the request, you could group them by topic, which I do, and then to identify what those requests look like. So we're going to talk about what to do with those in other strategies, but for now it's just important in this step to realize that the requests are finite, They probably don't require you to personally answer them, but there's a if you could think of a way to respond to those, there's a finite list that you could dispatch quickly if you identified them. So that's the important thing in this particular strategy is to identify those requests.
And that particular strategy, I learned from you a couple of years ago, and it was a game changer for me. We'll talk about
Good.
that more in a minute. Today, we're talking about how to learn to say no without feeling guilty so that you can create more margin in your day and do what only you can do. We've talked through four of the eight strategies for doing that. We're going to have four more for you in just a moment, but stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has this ever happened to you? You write a list of goals with the best of intentions. You're excited and motivated for a couple of weeks, and then life gets in the way. You get distracted or discouraged. You stop moving toward what really inspires you. If you want to achieve what matters most, traditional goal setting will only get you so far. You need a proven plan. Soon, I'll be opening enrollment to my course, 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever. And in it, I'll show you my proven system to get clear on what you want to accomplish and then get started achieving it. You can't enroll yet, but you can join the waiting list. Just go to bestyearever.me and enter your email address to get updates. To say thanks, I'll send you a free copy of my ebook, How to Use Evernote to Track Your Biggest Goals. This will help you keep your goals organized so they don't get stuffed in a desk drawer and forgotten. If you're tired of making goals but not achieving them, don't miss your chance to discover how to stop drifting and start making meaningful progress in your life. Sign up today at bestyearever.me.
Well, today we're giving you a guide to a guilt-free no. And if you're anything like me, saying no is one of the hardest words to say because our heart and our intention is to be yes people, to give away as much as possible and really serve the people in our audience and our friends and relationships. But it's not possible to say yes to everything. So we need to learn how to say that no. Today, Michael is giving you 8 strategies for saying a guilt-free no so you can free up more margin to live your life the best that you can. So far, we've gone through 4 of those. The first is to acknowledge your resources are finite. It all starts right there. Mm-hmm. Number 2, determine who needs access to you and who doesn't. You can be very intentional about choosing who you give access to yourself to. 3, take practical steps to limit your accessibility. You cannot be there for every person. 4, make a list of common requests. So let's go ahead and move on to the 5th strategy, Michael. What is it?
Okay, so let's say you've got the list of common requests that we talked about in strategy 4. Now what you're going to do is use email templates in order to say no with grace.
Okay, this is a gold mine. I just have to say, you taught me how to do this. It has saved so much time just in my daily productivity for this one simple thing. I mean, the whole podcast is worth it for this right here.
Well, it is, and it's been a huge game changer for me because when those requests come in, the common ones, like when I was at Thomas Nelson, one of the common ones was, I'm thinking about writing a book. What advice would you give to me as a first-time author?
Okay, I hear that, and I wasn't CEO of Thomas Nelson, but I hear that quite often as well.
So what I would do in the old days before I started using templates is, you know, I might just kind of blow it off. I don't have time to respond. Or I would give kind of a half-hearted response like, you know, subscribe to Publishers Weekly or whatever I could think of at the moment or read this book. And I thought, no, here's what I want to do. If I could craft to that request the best response I could, a really thoughtful, helpful response, what would that look like? And so I write that template to be the most helpful I can be.
Including links. I've seen some of these that you do, including links and contact information for whoever, you know, they may want to contact with.
It's like if I really had the time to answer that request in a thoughtful way, here's how I would do it. But here's the cool thing. You're only going to do it one time. So you're going to write the template. And then you're going to use that template every time you get that request in the future. Now, you may want to slightly modify it. You may want to personalize it. But it's going to look to the person who's receiving it like you've given them a very generous, very thoughtful answer. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I would get speaking requests. And now I hardly take any speaking requests, maybe 4 or 5 a year. And so we say no a ton. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, so how can I say no to that kind of request? And how can I point them to some other helpful resources? And so I thought through that one. Uh-huh. Or here's another one. And you mentioned this earlier before the break. I get this request all the time where people say, hey, you know, I live in Nashville where you live, or I'm coming through Nashville. I'd love to have coffee and pick your brain.
Yes.
Which I've learned is code for, I want a consulting session, but I don't want to pay for it.
That is so true.
And so usually it comes from somebody that's an acquaintance. Uh-huh. You know, maybe I know them on social media. And they feel like because they follow me, that you know, I owe them this time. When to me, they're, you know, I hate to say it, but they're an acquaintance. Yeah. Okay, you know, they're a real person and they have value in the eyes of God and all that. But but to me, they're just an acquaintance.
They're allowed to ask for.
They're allowed to ask.
They're allowed to ask, but you can't say yes to all of
them. So how do you say no to that? It's so awkward.
So hard.
Because
yes.
It seems like such a minuscule request on their part, mm-hmm. right? So you think, I just feel terrible. So I would more often than not. Say yes to those because I don't want to be perceived as a jerk mm-hmm. or somebody that thinks, you know, they're too hot, mm-hmm. you know, to spend time with these people. And so what I did was I crafted a response that said something like this. It said, you know, man, thanks for the request. I really appreciate it. But in order to be faithful to my existing commitments, mm-hmm. I have to say no to commitments like this. I would enjoy nothing better than sitting down over coffee and talking about whatever you want to talk about, but I'm just unable to do that. Mm-hmm. That request frames it perfectly.
Yes.
And frankly, models for them how they need to be thinking about their life, because this is a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. You can't say yes to that coffee. I mean, my weeks are packed. I can't say yes to having coffee with somebody I don't know without stealing from something else.
Yes.
It might be my morning workout. It might be my quiet time. It might be my date with my wife. It might be time with my children. But it's a zero-sum game. So I can't say yes there without saying nowhere, somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Lisa Turkhurst talks about this in her book. What's the name of the book?
The Best Yes.
The Best Yes.
Great book. We love Lisa. She's
oh,
a
my
good
gosh.
Friend. But she has to make these decisions all the time as well.
Well, and she frames it in that, and you want to give your best yes. You mm-hmm. know, you don't want to say yes to somebody that's an acquaintance, that's a one-off, somebody you probably won't ever see again. It might be really helpful to them, but it wouldn't be helpful to your family.
Yes.
Or it wouldn't be helpful to your health. So you want to give it your best yes, and that requires saying no to, unfortunately, the lesser things in your scale of priorities. So these templates help that.
It helps immensely. I have used several, you know, getting requests for book endorsements, you know, the yep. Invitation to coffee, the speaking requests, the writing. I mean, there's so many different ways you can do this. Just set up an email signature. You can label it according to the request, and it is so easy.
Yeah, it is. And let me just give you a couple more because this will stimulate people's okay. thinking. But one is we get requests for donations all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, it may be a local school, it may be somebody that's, you know, got just some special project or whatever. I mean, all worthy causes. And again, you have to admit that your resources are limited,
yes.
including your finances. You know, I mean, I am certainly in a good spot financially, better than ever before, but I don't have unlimited resources.
Yes.
I can't give to everything. So Gail and I have decided that we're going to be very strategic. So we really only give, in addition to our local church, two additional charities because we want to be all in.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we want to consolidate our resources and really give to those.
Like create a true partnership between
That's
you
right.
and that
yep.
organization. Whereas if you had 100 or 150, there wouldn't be
yeah.
that relationship.
So, you know, you give $100 here, $100 there.
Yes.
I'd rather give a few thousand to something that I really believe
yes.
in and be involved with. So we do the same thing. You know, thanks for your request. This sounds like a worthy charity or whatever. But right now, Gail and I are committed to two charities. We do consider this once a year. We'd be glad to put this on file and consider it when we do our analysis and our evaluation at the end of the year.
That's great. That's a great. So it's a no, and yet it leaves you open to the possibility of
That's
consideration.
Right.
But like we talked about earlier, it puts a pause on it just a
it
little
does.
Bit so you can have some space to process and think through.
So the email templates thing can really help you. And you mentioned something just in terms of operationally how you do this. In fact, let's say that for the next strategy. I'll
okay.
get into that a
All right.
Little
let's go ahead. Okay. So use email templates to say no with grace. Then what is the sixth strategy?
You know, sorry, before we get to that,
okay.
what I would also do is I would write out the answers to these templates. And it's going to be a project that might take you a couple of weeks in your spare time. But you're writing these emails anyway.
Yes.
Right?
And it's once. You're doing it once and saving tons of time down the road.
So what I did was for several weeks, every time I got one of these requests that was on my list, I did the thoughtful thing. And I responded to that person, but I saved that as the email template.
Okay.
Okay. So then I populated that list over time. So I didn't get it all done at once, but I got it done over time, actually kind of in the warp and woof of my normal activities. Okay.
So got it. Strategy now, six. Move on to number six.
Adopt a process for responding to those requests. Okay. So a couple of things here. These templates can actually be put into your email program as email signatures. You know, email signatures where you have standard text that you use at the end of your email message. It might be as simple as sent from my iPhone.
Uh-huh.
Or it might be, you know, thanks, Michelle Cachat, and then your title or your webpage or all that. I mean, those are email signatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no limit on how much text you can put in there. So you can actually name those things like request for coffee. And then that could be your template that you use there. Or you could put a request for speaking consideration, and there's your response. And so all those email templates can live literally as email signatures in your email program. Now, if you want to get more sophisticated in what we do today, because I have a team that helps me, we use a customer service program called Rhino Support.
Okay.
Rhino like the animal.
Yes.
Rhino Support. And there are many others out there that are great, Zendesk and a few others. But they usually have a provision for email templates or boilerplate text.
Okay.
And you can use that too. You could also use, you know, not to get too geeky, but you could use a macro processor where you can type a few keys abbreviation and it
just
expands.
It just pops up. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I've found for most people the email signature thing is a great way to do it.
Well, it's easy for people like me who aren't super technical.
Yeah.
And so all I have to do is click on that signature and it's set. And then sometimes what I do is then I make it just slightly personal, you know, with a name,
sure,
a first name. And maybe, you know, if it's somebody I do know a little bit, I can personalize it. But the mass majority of the text is already established.
That's right. And that doesn't make it disingenuous.
No, not
at
all.
It makes it generous. Because you're giving that person your best thinking, your best resources, honest to goodness help.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a reasonable response, a reasonable decline that they can understand.
Yes.
And they feel honored in the process because you got back with them. like for example, recently, I sent out requests for endorsement of my new book. Okay. So I had a few people that took the initiative, including Brene Brown, whom I adore, but took the initiative to get back to me through her assistant and just said no, you know? And basically it was a version of, in order to be faithful to her existing commitments, you know?
Sounds familiar.
I was like, hey, don't use that on me. But I totally understood that.
Yes.
And I felt honored, even though she said no.
She at least responded.
She responded. And
Absolutely.
I said, I totally get it. I don't say yes to everything either. I totally, totally understand. What I don't like and where I feel dishonored is the people that won't even take the time to respond.
I agree. Yeah.
Now, those are people that could probably profit from email templates.
Totally. Well, I'm one of those people where there for a while after going through the last year and health issues and having four kids still living at home, some days it's just I can't even get to email.
Yeah.
I mean, just not even possible. And I don't want to not respond. So the templates makes it possible
makes
for
it
me
easy.
To make a touch, make a connection
yep.
without it requiring an hour of time.
Now, here's another kind of template that's different than email templates, but this also handles a lot of the requests that you get. I have a link on the top navigation of my website that says work with me.
Okay.
Because people come there and someone want to work with me. Maybe they think I could coach them or I could consult them or they want to hire me as a speaker or whatever. So I say, okay, well, let's make this easy. And I say, I used to respond when people said, can I pick your brain? You know, I used to say some version of no. And now I say, well, wait a second. Actually, you can. Because here's how you can pick my brain. There are thousands of blog posts that I've written, and you can search in the search bar because I've probably written on it somewhere before, right? Then I have my podcast. You know, that's another way you can pick my brain.
Which we want people to listen to the podcast.
Yes. And then there's Platform University. You know, I do them from least expensive to most expensive.
Okay.
So Platform University is only $30 a month at the time we're recording this. I think the price is going to go up. But $30 a month, and that's a way to get my best platform information. Or my course, Best Year Ever, is a great way to get my coaching, you know, albeit not personalized, but my coaching on goal setting and achievement. And so I just give this from least expensive to most expensive.
Different options. They can
but a lot
choose.
Of free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing you might think about if you're listening to this, doing.
And for several people, they hadn't even considered those options. So having it outlined in an email that they can look at and save and go through actually makes it very convenient for them.
Well, I'll tell you something where I got onto this. I realized that there were people that wanted to have coffee to me about talking about building their platform who had not read my book.
Oh, yes.
Okay, now think about this. So they weren't willing to invest the 10 or 12 hours to read the book. What they really wanted me to do is invest an hour of my time telling them what was in the book so they didn't have to read it.
Which doesn't seem quite fair.
Doesn't seem quite fair. Yeah. If you really want that information, so now what I say is, you know, have you read the book? I mean, that's like the basic prerequisite. Because I'm not going to get together and give you the Cliff Notes version in an hour when you can read it for yourself and get way more value out of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff.
Very smart. Very smart. Okay. So the fifth strategy was to use email templates to say no with grace. Number six, adopt a process for responding to those requests. What is the seventh strategy?
The seventh strategy is to delegate the whole process, if you can, and not everybody will be able to, but to people you trust.
Okay. So like an assistant or some member of your team.
Yep. And it was one of the, when I left Thomas Nelson to begin this journey as an entrepreneur, first as a solopreneur, then I hired an assistant, and now I'm a full-blown entrepreneur with a team. But in the days when I didn't have an assistant, I handled all those email templates.
Okay.
But then I hired an assistant, and only initially, I hired Trisha for 5 hours a week. All she did initially was this very work.
Okay.
Because she was smart, she was personable. And I trusted her to take those requests, because these people are precious to me, and I want to make sure they're handled well. And I knew I could trust her to respond in a way that was graceful and helpful, and not just, I don't want somebody that just mindlessly cuts and pastes the text.
Exactly. And I mean, like, that's so important. I've had people do that before, and it doesn't represent me very well.
Yes. Dear human being, you know, you want to... You know, dear Sarah or dear Bill, and then something warm, you know. So delegate it to people you can trust. So I have a team. I have two assistants right now that run our customer support and run all the email that comes into my public account at michael@michaelhyatt.com. They're kind of the first line of, I was going to say defense, but that sounds a little bit negative.
Yes.
They're the first line of helping.
Mm-hmm.
And so the stuff that gets through to me from that account is the stuff that is an unusual request that they can't address, and they'll forward that to me. So it's important to have those people that are partners with you.
Yes, and it really does have to be the right people that understand your heart, your approach, so they can really mirror that in the way that they deal with people.
Well, and the other thing that's cool about it is it's much easier for them, as it turns out, to say no than for me to say no.
Yes.
Because there
isn't that, you can say that again, because my assistant can say no far easier than I can.
It is easier for them because usually... they don't lose context in the middle of, you know, the heat of a request.
Yes.
So Susie, who's my primary assistant, understands my calendar. Mm-hmm. She knows how jammed it is.
Mm-hmm.
She can even say no to me. So when I make a request,
you gotta love that.
And I've empowered her to do that because when I'm managing my calendar, I get myself in trouble. And then I, you know, I hate my life and I hate my schedule and I'm just overcommitted. So she's able to say to somebody, you know, no, so that I never see it and have to deal with the emotional pull, you know, of saying no and feeling guilty about that and all the rest.
But for those who can't or don't have an assistant or somebody to delegate at this moment, the email templates really function as an assistant
Absolutely.
In a lot of ways. So that's a really good in-between step if you aren't quite at that place.
But here's the cool thing. It's an enormously powerful training device.
Yes.
So that once you bring somebody in, you say, okay, look, here's the 18 typical requests that I get.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the way I respond to them. And this is where we're going to start.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it makes the learning curve so much shorter.
It sure does. And it's cheaper for you too, because you're not having to do all the training of the assistant.
All right. So after you delegate to people you trust, what is that final strategy to learning to say a guilt-free no?
Accept the fact that you're going to be misunderstood.
Oh. Do we have to include this one?
Yes. There are going to be people that just don't get it. I mean, I've got... Not much, thankfully, but I've gotten some hate mail. There was a gentleman who visited my church who was an acquaintance, and I had lunch with him, actually, and it was a total waste of time. I mean, he came with no agenda. He talked about, I don't even remember what, just blathered on and on for an hour, wasted an hour of my time, didn't get him any help. And then he came to town again and he wanted me to spend time with him. And I said to Susie, I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, he got really upset.
Did he?
And kind of went off on social media. I mean, he had about 12 followers, so it didn't really matter. But he went off on social media and just talked about, you know, I guess I'm too important now to spend time with him. You just have to accept that they're just people.
It's just going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I heard somebody recently saying that, like, I don't know, 10 or 12% of the population is mentally ill, you know, tragic, but a fact. Yeah. And so just the odds of getting people that are not going to be mentally quite right, that might get upset with you, you just have to accept that.
It happens. And even well-intentioned people can get their feelings hurt.
That's right.
Part of maturity is just allowing people to have their emotion without adopting it on yourself,
right?
And that's okay. But you still have to be committed to your own. I'm probably more committed to this now than ever before because I'm more aware of my limited resources.
Right.
It's worth the struggle. It's even worth disappointing people on occasion to make sure you have the right boundaries to live within, both for your relationships and your work and your health.
But I'll tell you what I've discovered, Michelle, is that for most people, we go through all this anxiety, they're going to be so disappointed. The truth is, they're not.
They're really not.
They just kind of go on.
A really good no actually makes everybody feel safe.
It does.
And I didn't realize that for a long time, but when we are really good about knowing our yeses and knowing our nos, people understand that it's like we have a sense of who we are and they feel even more comfortable around us.
And then we can move on. Like when I got that no from Brené Brown to endorse my book, I thought about it for maybe, I mean, literally 5 seconds. I was like, oh, that's too bad. And then, like, I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just life.
Yeah, it's just thing. And so she protected her calendar. Good for her. She honored me by having her assistant respond to me. And I'm still a huge fan.
Yes.
I read everything of Brené's. I love her. I promote
her
whenever I can.
We're both huge fans, yes.
And so it just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so that fear that we're going to disappoint somebody or hurt their feelings is largely unfounded.
True. Because they're having to say their own no's as well.
That's right.
And they want grace. So most people are very understanding.
Yep.
But don't be surprised
when
there's a random or occasional person that gets upset when you say no.
Yep.
You can't change your strategy based on that one person.
And it's especially true if you're involved in social media and you're kind of out there. Because people feel like, by virtue of the fact they have access to you on social media or through your blog, that somehow, and I don't fully understand this, but they somehow feel that they have a relationship. And you owe them a deeper relationship.
Yes.
Now, if you actually confronted them on that, they'd go, oh, no, that's crazy. I mean, I get that. Mm-hmm. But there's just something about social media that makes people think that.
It's so true. I find it all the time as well. Well, I have really enjoyed today's episode talking about 8 strategies to be able to say a guilt-free no and create more margin in your life. We have enjoyed you being with us today. If you've enjoyed the episode, you can find the entire transcript as well as the show notes at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you'd rather watch the video, you can find that at his website as well. But before you go, we have one request for you. If you could take just a few moments to head over to iTunes and rate the podcast, it's huge for us. I just can't even overstate it. It's huge. It helps us get a little bit higher rankings so that people can actually find this material. And I know there's more than just me out there that needs to learn how to say a guilt-free no. So take the time to do that for us. We'll be very grateful. Any final thoughts today, Michael?
Yeah, I think it's important for people that are listening to this or watching this to remember what's at stake.
Yes.
Because their sanity, their margin,
yes,
and what matters most to them is what's at stake. If you say yes to everybody, if you don't get a system to say no, you're putting at risk everything you hold dear, everything you consider important, and you're going to get to the end of your life with a lot of regrets. You will have said yes to everything but the things that truly matter.
Well said, Michael. Thank you. Well, thank you again for being with us today. And until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.